Welcome to Between the Lines. Listening to literature online. This is show number 173. Books, promo, esoteric, and mundane. To take a look at several books I recently read and a little promotion for my next book, book two of Musing series called Photo Albums of the Heart Mind. So the two esoteric books here are Francis H. Cook, Hua Yin Buddhism, The Jewel Net of Indra, published by Pennsylvania State University, C.G. Jung and the Sioux Traditions, Dreams, Visions, Nature, and the Primitive by Vine Deloria Jr. That's published by Spring Journal Books. And Base Nation, How U.S. Military Bases Abroad Harm America and the World by David Vine. And that is published by, if I can open the book, Metropolitan Books, Henry Holt and Company. Base Nation one is the mundane one, and that's kind of a combination of what Photo Albums of the Heart Mind is about. It's a bit about esoterica and a bit about the mundane. This is your host, Monk. Thanks for listening. This is an impromptu show. Just decided to do it and picked up the books. It's also the first little bit of a promo for my next book, because while writing it, certain themes and topics came up, and then so I wanted to read certain books to get a bit of background information. Just sort of see if I could learn something, kind of double check sort of my statements, themes, whatever you call them, and you know, perhaps it would enhance the writing, an idea. Sometimes it's like reading a whole book just to get one little idea to put into another book, but that's part of the process, and plus I get to learn a lot while doing it. So the book, my forthcoming book is going to be book two of the Musing series, which started with Musings with the Golden Sparrow, which is a free flow stream of consciousness style, and this next one, Photo Albums of the Heart Mind, is very different style. All the sections, it's about 160 pages, a little bit less with the actual text pages, but each section is only one page. So that is an excellent discipline for writing. Sometimes there were decisions on what to say or not say, so the space limitation is good, very good discipline Some pages may be a half a page, whatever, but one line is sort of like a haiku prose, so each page gives the reader something to think about, almost like a Zen koan. And then there's nine chapters. Each chapter has a theme, and all the there's repeating themes, refrains throughout the book, so that some similar topics to the Musings book, first book, but this is more a little bit less of the political information that's in the first one, and kind of interwoven with a sense of encouraging people to tune in off the radar, which gets explained what that means. Essentially, whether it's, meditate, talk to the trees, talk to nature, try to tune in to what's going on and connect with your friends on some level that way. Pay attention to your dreams, all these ways that seem to be getting, I don't know how popular they are or not, but looking at what's going on in the world, they seem to be getting, have gotten somewhat subjugated to the instant access information and communicating with people. So that was like a big sort of inspiration for the book, was to address that social worldly observation. A lot of good stuff happening with gadgets, but it just I like to look at the big picture and say, well, where is the consciousness? Where are people putting their attention, and what are they not looking at? What are they looking at? So that's kind of the overview. And it's a book about interdependence and about flowing, learning to flow. Explains what heart mind is. We tend to be a very information intellectual society in the West and other places too. So the book is an encouragement to act, respond, just to kind of be with that heart space and how that connects with the mind. What else? Yeah, the book's also about photography and the meta, some literal photography, because also the metaphor of the title is photo albums of the heart mind, is that kind of carrying, being able to carry, we all sort of carry images with us, whether memory from childhood or a past life or something that happened the other day. It could be a positive memory, a negative memory, whatever it is. It all kind of infuses or feeds our, whatever you call it, subconscious or the layers within us. That so that metaphor of that we are kind of carrying around these photo albums of our heart minds. So that's the kind of poetic part of it, and it branches out. So three books. One is an ongoing study for me, as far as the U.S. Empire and its military bases. So that's a key thing in the book. Some people try to pick a theme or a topic that they think is most significant to that needs to change or needs awareness in the world. And that one to me is the military bases, because not only the war aspect, but the financial aspect, the huge amounts of billions of dollars, the whole industry behind it, and then the whole, military war stuff. So a while back I had learned of from Chalmers Johnson, historian and professor writer, learned about that the just even to call it an empire, that there are all these bases. He came up with the phrase blowback. And then read Nick Turse's book called The Complex, just how much the military industrial complex is affected in the daily lives. Just examples of when you've got Pizza Hut and McDonald's on military bases in Germany or, some foreign country, then that's the level of the infrastructure. So this is a newer book, David Vine, Base Nation: How U.S. Military Bases Abroad Harm America and the World. So he tells it in his title. It's got some maps. It's a good read, very interesting. a lot of information about how the bases started, and even, some mention of the natives. There's a page with native lands and early U.S. military bases abroad, and this shows 90 forts. Hardly anything on the along the whole east coastline. One down in Florida, Fort Brooke, it says. So otherwise, it's all kind of starting with oh, doesn't have the states on here, but going into the central and out to out west. But 90 at one time, 90 forts, which is sort of the predecessor of the military bases abroad. Now an estimated 1,000, with hundreds in Germany, though we're no longer at war with Germany, South Korea, and there was another big one, maybe Italy. Several swords, a huge amount compared to the others. And then another interesting bit with Germany is 80% of the weaponry and such like that has been going or goes to Afghanistan and Iraq goes through Ramstein, Germany. So this has got a lot of interesting statistics and a lot of research about the finances, the prostitution. Oh, the how the army bases became, family friendly. It's like little Americas and all kinds of interesting stuff. And as bases got a little unpopular in foreign countries, then they shifted to what he calls the lily pad strategy, which is kind of bases on islands or out of the way places, and that whole deal. So the up note in the book is saying that when foreign bases close, though it might affect the economy in the short term, that in generally there's a rebound and sometimes things even better in the long term. So that whole kind of fear tactic of you'll ruin the economy is it may happen sometime. You'll ruin the economy and the culture and stuff. It may happen sometimes, but overall the studies reported otherwise. So I found that the most promising note. And spoiler alert, that's what I put in my book. That bit. So that book, because that ties in with what's called full spectrum dominance, which just covers all this stuff. Oh yeah, by the way, I over the years poetically I've written about that whole forts, the franchises, and we see the fast food franchises around the country, now the world are just all, whether it's churches, fast food. It's just to my observation, it's very tied in with that psychology. So anyway, that's like sort of one map of the world if you look at it that way. And that got me to the what in Buddhist and Hindu lore is Indra's net, which this is in the book, but it's the best way to explain it rather than me talking about it. Indra's net, a single glittering jewel in each eye of the net. And since the net itself is infinite in dimension, the jewels are infinite in number. There hang the jewels, glittering like stars, the first magnitude, a wonderful sight to behold. If we now arbitrarily select one of these jewels for inspection and look closely at it, we will discover that in its polished surface there are reflected all the other jewels in the net, infinite in number. Not only that, but each of the jewels reflected in this one jewel is reflecting all the other jewels, so that there is an infinite reflecting process occurring. The Hua Yen school has been fond of this image, mentioned many, many times in the literature, because it symbolizes a cosmos in which there is an infinitely repeated interrelationship among all the members of the cosmos. This relationship is said to be one of simultaneous mutual identity and mutual intercausality. So this book, Hua Yen Buddhism, The Jewel Net of Indra by Francis H. Cook, that gets into quite a deep look at the Buddhist view of things and interdependence and identity and what those means and emptiness and what those mean. And but the image of the net just came to me as just so significant when I see people looking at their at their cell phones, and you can have somebody take a photo of something and then show it to you on their cell phone, and then within seconds they can post it online, and it goes from true life to the gadget true life to on a screen to somewhere around the world. And it's like that image of the infinite reflections just seems quite appropriate. And again, that where are we going with the gadget level of Indra's net and the other levels, which the book also gets into the theme of light and how we are, we ourselves are made of light, among other things, but that the lights we shine and mirror with each other and whatever every day, that level of life, that where's that track and where's that net? And one more book by Vine Deloria Jr., C.G. Jung and the Sioux: Traditions, Dreams, Visions, Nature, and the Primitive. That book, because touches on the native perspective, and that's another theme in the photo albums of the Heart Mind, is trying to highlight the respect for nature. And that seems to be certainly a shift recently with what's happened at Standing Rock, all the pipelines and resource issues. So that's a big theme. And then since the whole Empire Base thing is started with the genocide of 90 to 95% of the native peoples on the land that's called United States or America, again, that looking to the native people and the energy of this land and that tradition as a key part of what's truly going on here. And certainly a resurgence of native awareness with and after Standing Rock and Eagle and the Condor prophecy and all these things going on now that are the turning of the tide, but that's sort of counter, there's this balance with all the other turning, the revertings with you got with the Trump administration trying to crack down on LGBT rights and things like that. So it's like certain things are going evolving and other things seem to be devolving. So there's this dance going on, how that works. And this is a very in-depth sort of psychological exploration comparing Jung's premises and research with how they match up with the Lakota people. And basically, Deloria shows how many of he uses he sort of not uses, but he explores Jung as a kind of bridge, trying to bridge the worlds of what the Lakota and the Sioux, also includes the Dakota and Nakota peoples, what they know, ancient traditions, and their connection with Turtle Island, which is what the U.S., then became called the U.S., but one of its true names is Turtle Island. So how they match up, and that he was probably the closest one of Western mind frame psychology, no pun intended, to touch on things that are ancient tradition for the Lakota peoples. And so, and some of the premise of Jung was a bit, again, it's in context with his where what the, that time period was, because he actually met he was very affected by his visit to Taos Pueblo. But some of his stuff was flavored by sort of the objectification or looking at not really getting that native people, the level that they're connected with the land and the subtleties that and connecting with nature and spirit realms and dreams and visions and the subtlety of what guides them. You can't like study that and sum it up. It's just impossible. But Western psychology and science tries to do that and put it in a in a book or a theory or words or stuff, and it helps, it's a guide, but it doesn't quite do it. So there's limitations to what Jung presented, but then there's also overlap. So it's an in-depth just trying to grasp the in-depth psychology levels of the book was a challenge to me. Actually had this book a long time before I could get into it. It's kind of like a certain mind frame, similarly to the Buddhist book, where there are books where I had to read a couple of few pages and really stop and think about it. And a lot of the Buddhist stuff, I just part of it, it was hard to get. Part of it, Lee, I think, because he's trying to explain what, say, a word like emptiness means, which, you know, one example he gives is like, you know, your pocket, you have a pocket which is empty, but there's still a pocket. It's lined, there's air, whatever, in it, you know, but it's, and we say it's empty. So that's one example. And another example he gives is kind of how emptiness in the Buddhist sense is really sort of the common, I won't say denominator because that's sort of below and negative, but I would say the common nominator of equality is that sort of emptiness of all things, the inherent emptiness, which I would translate in a sort of scientific way as everything made of, you know, the molecular structure of things, the cellular structure. So if you look at, there's a tapestry on the wall, but that's made of these molecules, and I am also made of molecules, and so is the desk, and so is the air, and so is everything. So it's sort of that emptiness has a whole deeper level, and it kind of levels the playing field, so to speak. So interesting stuff, which even to get a gist of what it means kind of has, are things that one can go then and just think about or meditate on and say, wow, how does that apply? One of the things I really got out of it was the level of interdependence and interconnectedness, and just another way of thinking. Like at one point he says, he explains how he'll say things like cause and effect are the same. And by the words, that sounds preposterous, but then he explains it, you know, because the cause is one thing and the effect is another thing. But he explains it like with a stick, say one end of a stick to another end of a stick. It is one stick. But of course, you know, the point A is different than point B on the stick, but in essence it is the same because it's one stick. So that's an explanation of cause and effect, that something may cause something, but it's technically not a cause until the effect happens. So that's another thing, you go, whoo, we gotta sit there and think about that for a little while. See, try to give an example. You know, say you leave your the faucet on, and the water is you know coming out. So it's not a big deal, but you know, say it's going down. It's not even overflowing the sink. It's just going down the drain. But then you get the water bill, and you know, a while later, you see a huge water bill, and you can't figure it out because you left the water on. So that cause of the water could take time for the effect to happen. So he's the verbal explanation ways, that book on the Hua Yan Buddhism is saying it's not a cause until there's an effect. So that's another way to look at it. Similarly, with there's the metaphor or the example of one of the guys who just did a lot to explaining these things back in, I'm not sure, 13th, 14th century, I think it was, talks about a barn and how, you know, the rafter is the key part to the barn, but it's not a rafter until it's a barn. So a similar thing with the cause and effect, where it's technically not a rafter until it is part of the barn. So the rafter is causing the barn, and the barn is also causing the rafter. So interesting stuff. And the other part of the book mentions is that sort of the view of this, the Buddhist way of that the universe is the body of Buddha. So it's kind of this very interesting holistic kind of way to say the body of Buddha. So everything from, you know, outer space to the hardest rock to the tree, again, it has that emptiness or Buddha nature, the way sort of say everything has Buddha nature, so that the body of the Buddha is everything. In part of my comparison or seeing a similarity that helped these books come together for writing the photo albums of the heart mind is that, you know, native people say all our relations, that everything is interrelated. So you have that, again, similar to me, to my view, a similar way of saying that there's these interdependent, interconnected sameness. And then in a similar way as mystical Kabbalah with the tree of life, you know, the tree, as with anything, you know, that's the rootedness And without the rootedness, one cannot climb, go to the top. And even while at the top, one is also at the bottom. You know, it's like a simultaneous all over the map, all over the place. Whatever word you choose for it, the net, the tree, the cosmos, the body of Buddha. I don't know if that's oversimplifying. It makes sense to me as a simplified way to connect these different traditions, but you know, some may have differences, so that or distinctions. So that's why I'm saying it may be oversimplification, but it shows some level of common thread, and that's a good thing. And the thread metaphor is in the book too, of course, with the net. And so wow, that's a lot to talk about. And then have the more mundane back to this is what's going on with the Daily Bull stuff, you know, in the Base Nation book, kind of, you know, where the infrastructures are in the grid. And it really got me to see on a, you know, that worldly practical level that, okay, you know, we talk about transformation and change, and we're, you know, we get excited when something changes, and that's nice and it's good. And it's another, you know, check mark for the sway of the balance and feel positive. But then just knowing how much infrastructure is already out there and people's lives that are affected, that are working and part of that infrastructure to shift the tides, to shift things, is not only on a physical level of what happens with all that infrastructure, say, as we shift to solar vehicles, what happens with the gas stations? That takes work and people, and it affects people's lives and jobs and things. So there's a, you know, the people and the resources and that whole level of infrastructure stuff that the Base Nation book got me thinking about. You know, obviously the first step is swaying people's awareness to cut back, say, you know, understand some need to have defense bases or whatever at some level, whether it's at home, you know, abroad is another question. But let's just say there's some that's normal, but the huge reduction, the money savings, and then so that's the gist of Fine's book is presenting the you know, what that structure is about. It got me thinking about the huge infrastructure and the cost savings that could happen, and then what does it take to make that happen? So got interesting play of David Vine and Vine Deloria. Which I just realized their initials are D's and V, backwards, forwards, whatever. And then Francis Cookbook. It gets one to think. And so that's the gist. Could do a whole show on each of those books, but doing a little long-range promo because there's a ways to go till the book's ready. But There's a feeling as a writer of the urgency to say things and then putting them in a book form, and then realizing there's a point where, okay, it's basically written, it's said, but there's a lot more logistics to happen, and then the physical production of the book and that kind of stuff. So there's a sort of a letdown, a little bit of a letdown, like, okay, I've got this message to get out to people, but it's on hold, which is okay too, because I think of Bob Dylan's line, I'll know my song well before I start singing. So there's that lag time before the book gets out there. So sometimes I think that spurs me on, the urge to do the show, kind of partly to get it out there, partly to just see if the book is going to make sense. So talking about it tonight seems to make sense, and to share that now is nice. So thanks for listening, and have a good one, and stay connected with whatever it is that connects you with your source, and then connecting with other beings. That's of course on a large part of the book and on a lot of people's heart minds, I think. How do we connect, how do we interact with each other in these productive, positive ways, along with, say, you know, Facebook and gadgets and all that stuff. It has its place, but I strongly feel there's got to be more balance and attention to the energy and the vibes that literally people make when they're with each other, or, you know, communicating in a sort of clear, pure way, even using the gadgetry. There's a difference. So many, many layered topics that just take a long time to even say all the layers, but just getting the conversation, the ideas percolating is, I guess that's part of my job. So anyway, hope that sparked some interesting bits for you in your interconnected ways. So be well, take care, thank you. And we'll go out with the unofficial theme song for photo albums of the Heart Mind, Bruce Coburn's song, The Coming Rains.
Soon, and the thought of you comes on like the feel of the coming.